Good morning, everyone. My name is Jessica Barrett-Ives, and this is my colleague, Maria Damian. We're here today to describe a study entitled Nurses' Experiences in Monitoring Patients Receiving Opioid Analgesia. So that's a brief outline of our presentation. An important aspect of acute care nursing is the monitoring of patients receiving opioids for analgesia. The most important role of the nurse in this monitoring is the monitoring of patients for opioid-related adverse events. Namely, these are sedation and respiratory depression. The incidence of opioid-related adverse events is approximately 0.5%, and this has prompted a body of research into how nurses should monitor patients receiving opioids for analgesia. So based on this body of research, investigators have looked into guidelines or what the guidelines should be with regards to the nursing opioid monitoring of patients receiving these analgesics. So in short, monitoring must include systematic serial assessments of both the level of sedation and respiratory status. In addition, more vigilant monitoring must occur under certain circumstances, including the first 24 hours after a surgery, at the peak of action of the opioid, and in the presence of other predisposing factors. The literature regarding opioid monitoring focuses mainly on practice guidelines, and it is not focused so much on the nurse's experiences of actually performing opioid monitoring, and the barriers and the facilitators that they face in performing the monitoring. So to introduce the context within the McGill University Health Center where we performed the research, in 2006, a Quebec coroner's report into the deaths of several patients due to opioid-related adverse events led to recommendations from the OIIQ for the monitoring of patients receiving opioids in in Quebec health centers. So these recommendations required that the health centers update or implement guidelines for opioid monitoring. And despite such guidelines being implemented at the MUHC, two different surveys done in 2012 indicate that guidelines may not be fully integrated into nursing practice at the McGill University Health Center. So the local context within the McGill University Health Center and the lack of data regarding the nurses' experiences of opioid monitoring and also the barriers and facilitators that they face in performing the monitoring formed the rationale for the study that we did. So based on the review of the literature and the local context needs, the following questions were proposed and answered in our research. So the first one relating to the experiences of the nurses, what are their experiences? And then in addition to that, what are the barriers and facilitators that they face in performing their monitoring? So a qualitative descriptive design using semi-structured interviews was used in a convenient sample of 10 nurses working in the MUHC in adult inpatient acute care units. So the data analysis method that we used was thematic content analysis. This is a table with our sample characteristics. Of note is that our sample was small, 10 nurses. 8 of them had baccalaureate degrees and also had less than 5 years of experience, so basically a young population of nurses.
Okay, so just to give you a brief overview of the findings, the first two themes pertain to the first research question, or the nurse's experiences monitoring patients on opioids, with the first theme being emphasis on pain management, and the second theme being inconsistencies in nurses' opioid monitoring. The third theme is titled Barriers and Facilitators to Opioid Monitoring, and answer the second research question. The barriers identified from the data included lack of knowledge, workload, and running around. The facilitators nurses identified included personal strategies and teamwork. So in terms of the first theme, emphasis on pain management, the nurses really described pain management as being a very important part of their experiences with monitoring these patients. And nurses were very concerned with ensuring that their patients' pain was adequately managed and most of them suggested that they communicated with doctors to ensure that this was happening. Additionally, nurses were also concerned with managing opioid-related side effects such as nausea and constipation. So from the interviews, we also noted inconsistencies in nurses' opioid monitoring. So for example, none of the respiratory and sedation assessments described included all of the factors in the MUHC clinical practice guidelines, or CPGs, as we'll refer to them from now on. Nurses also described performing a reassessment after administering an opioid. However, most didn't do so at the peak of action of the opioid, as suggested by the clinical practice guidelines. One negative case to point out is participant 6, who stated, "Nothing has ever happened. I have no incentive to go and check on them." Under the third theme of barriers and facilitators, the subtheme lack of knowledge was deduced from what the nurses sort of described in their interviews. Most participants seemed to be unaware of the guidelines and didn't really reference them in the interviews. Only two of the participants actually were aware of where the CPGs were located on their units, which was on the internet. And this possibly could contribute to a lack of clarity on what the monitoring parameters are. Many of the participants also described confusion regarding patient risk factors for opioid-related adverse events. In relation to the lack of knowledge, all of the participants described participating in some training or teaching with regards to opioid monitoring CPGs. Participant 3 stated, "It was a quick little thing that was tucked in with the rest of the orientation. And then you were shown that there are policies." Some participants consider that more training on CPG content might be helpful in guiding what parameters to monitor and document. Participant 4 described the positive effect that seeking supplemental training, including a day-long workshop and several in-services, had on her practice of monitoring patients. This participant also seemed to display better knowledge of CPGs compared to the other participants. The second barrier nurses cited was workload, and that having a smaller nurse-to-patient ratio and very high patient acuity had a negative impact on their ability to monitor. And care of patients who were perceived as more acute was likely to be prioritized over care of patients that required opioid monitoring. And the exact level of perceived acuity that would warrant for the nurse to sort of set aside the recommendation was not clearly expressed by the participants. However, the following quote suggests that such circumstances possibly occur often. "The opioid surveillance sheet is not always consistently filled out by the nurses, but from time to time you'll see that it is filled out. And then we think, oh, you know, that was an easy shift. They didn't have a lot to do." The third barrier that the nurses described was the concept of running around. So participant 2 describes this. "Sometimes you're running around, like when patients are in rooms really far from each other. Another aspect of running around had to do with the fragmentation of documentation and redundancy within the documentation." Now moving on to the facilitators. The first facilitator described by the nurses had to do with personal strategies. So for example, one described how they would organize their day using a personal assignment paper, while others described how developing a routine helped and facilitated opioid monitoring. The second facilitator described was teamwork, and this seemed to have an effect on decreasing the workload. As participant 5 shared, "Workload is something that makes the monitoring more difficult. So when you're collaborating and you're working as a team, it makes it easier to monitor." Participant 3 also described the culture on her unit as being one of "we're a team together," and how this was helpful to monitoring practice. So in trying to make sense of our findings, literature about guideline use among clinicians was very helpful. The first is the Parish model, which provided conceptual references and helped us in understanding our themes and findings. So the Parish model was developed in 1998, and it's a model describing the implementation of research into practice. According to the model, a successful implementation of CPGs into practice is affected by 3 elements: the level and nature of the evidence to be used, the context or environment in which the CPG is to be placed, and the method by which the CPG implementation process is to be facilitated. And in the model, these 3 elements have equal importance in determining how successful the CPG use and implementation is. Each of the elements is positioned on a high, low to high continuum. And in general, if you optimize all the three elements, this yields superior guideline use. Abrahamson, Fox, and Dobling in their 2012 study also provide conceptual references for many of the concepts we elicited from our interviews. So they examined free text responses to two open-ended survey questions provided by 575 nurses, and these questions related to the nurses' perceptions of facilitators and barriers to use of CPGs. Davis and Taylor Vasey also provided some strategies for guideline implementation and use. So in the Abrahamson study, education, orientation, and training were collectively the most salient facilitators to CPG use. Similar to this, in the parish model, facilitation may be in the form of education, but it's highlighted that some strategies are superior to others, basically. And this supports our findings that suggest a link between training or knowledge regarding the CPGs and actual clinical practice. The major barrier to CPG use identified by Abrahamson was time, staffing, and workload, which echoes the major barrier described by the nurses in our study. Within the parish model, this could fit under the context element of adequate human resources. Abrahamson also articulates perceived need for decision support as another major facilitator to CPG use. They conceptualize this as the nurse perceiving the need for evidence support. And our interviews illustrated a possible tendency by the nurses to prioritize other care over opioid monitoring, and it's possible that the nurses might not perceive a need to follow the opioid monitoring CPGs because they do not perceive opioid monitoring to be as critical a concern as other aspects of their care. Within the parish model, this would fit under the clinical experience where the clinician judges the evidence as not relevant. Reminder mechanisms have also been identified in the literature as facilitators of CPG implementation. And these systems can be, for example, posters or laminated cards that the clinician would carry with them. The nurses in our study shared some strategies they had developed, namely the use of a personal assignment paper for organizing care and to remind them to perform the monitoring. Lastly, the teamwork was also noted as a significant facilitator by Abrahamson. Teamwork is defined as lateral cooperation between healthcare workers, and our findings support this assertion. Within the parish framework, teamwork is a criteria under culture, which appears to be a very important factor in adhering to guidelines.
Our limitations, briefly, our sample size was small. 10 nurses were interviewed, so it's not necessarily generalizable to the whole institution. In addition, only 1 to 4 nurses were interviewed in each unit, so it wasn't easy to get an idea of exactly what was going on each particular unit. As I previously mentioned, 8 out of the 10 nurses had less than 5 years of experience, so that may have affected our findings. In addition, our study was not grounded in a theoretical framework or model. So in terms of future research that could be done in this area, the use of a knowledge translation framework such as the parish framework or one of the other ones that Maria mentioned could be of use in exploring relationships between the concepts that we saw in our study. The barriers and facilitators could be further investigated from different perspectives, from management perspectives, from patient perspective. We could look at more at the attitudes and the motivations of nurses in performing the opioid monitoring as well. It could also investigate the interventions that could modify barriers and sort of build up facilitators that are known to promote CPG use, like Maria was telling us. Some of these things include looking at barriers and facilitators separately, because just because something is a barrier doesn't mean that its opposite is a facilitator and vice versa. So in conclusion, our exploration of nurses' experiences in monitoring patients receiving opioids and the barriers and facilitators that they face in performing this monitoring showed the complexities of implementing clinical practice guidelines in a large institution. The implementation of such guidelines can benefit from a multifaceted approach that would include the use of evidence-based knowledge translation frameworks. in the implementation strategies. So in using one of these knowledge translation frameworks, the barriers and facilitators could be examined and addressed. Specifically, the barriers would need to be addressed first in order to allow for supporting of the facilitative factors. That's it.
I just want to thank our study advisors, the course professors, and the MPDs who helped us with recruitment, as well as the participants, of course, and our friends and families. That's it. So, for example, so the question was regarding interdisciplinary collaboration and what seemed to work with the nurses. So, the nurses collaborated, for example, with physicians to ensure that their patients' pain was well managed and to ensure that side effects were managed. But they also collaborated with physicians when there was an incidence of, for example, an adverse event where they needed prompt intervention for the patient. Also, nurses collaborated with each other, for example, when they were going on break, when they had a particular worry about a patient who, let's say, was more at risk for adverse related opioid opioid-related adverse events, they would communicate this in a more systematic way to the nurse covering them. And this would also happen at change of shift or handoff. No.
So not as a collective, but sort of informally?
I have a question. Was the fact that the nurses who were caring for patients with opioid, I assume it wasn't the whole unit, like the managers or like nurse in charge who assigned this patient to the nurses, would they take that into account? Is it something that they share the nurses?
So the question was, did the nurse in charge or the manager take into consideration the number of patients assigned to a nurse who required opioid monitoring? So the participants did speak about, for example, having to monitor four patients on opioids and how this was really difficult. And most did not suggest that this was taken into consideration. So this could be sort of an implication for the units really to think about this in patient assignment.
One last question. I thank you for your presentation. I was just wondering, you mentioned in the context of your presentation that it wasn't really high on the nurse's radar, or it wasn't something they were particularly concerned about. And I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit more about that and how they reacted to your interviews because of that, if they were surprised or how they responded to your questions, and that if you think that the questions may have impacted their practice going forward or raised awareness in any way.
Very good question. Thank you. So the question is basically how the nurses reacted to the interviews and the questions that we asked them. It's interesting that some of them sort of reacted in different ways. I don't know if any of them had reflected on their opioid monitoring practice prior to the interviews. So I suppose that potentially they did reflect on it after the completion of the interview, but whether or not it affected their practice or whether or not it sort of changed their attitudes about opioid monitoring, it's hard to say. It is important for us to mention that they all did feel like they knew what the aim of opioid monitoring was, and they all felt that it was important. It just that the seeing of how important it was seemed to be on a spectrum, depending on who was interviewed.
And just to build on what Jessica said regarding sort of reflection, some in sort of speaking with the nurses, some of them did, in thinking about particular scenarios, they thought, talking about this with you, I'm going to know what to do in this particular situation. So, for example, one nurse was talking about sending a patient to a test and how that would communicate in terms of the opioid monitoring. So, would she communicate with the person on the receiving end where the patient was going for the test? And she sort of reflected on this, and it was quite interesting, actually. Yeah. So I think it definitely elicited some reflective practice, for sure.
Thank you very much.